The following program is intended as an educational program, not as investment advice or as a recommendation to buy, sell, or participate in any investment vehicle, product, offering, or strategy. Investment advisory services are offered through Turning Point Financial, a registered investment advisor. Any references to specific securities, investment vehicles, or strategies are intended only as examples, not as recommendations. All investments involve risk, including the possibility of losing money. Welcome to Money in Mission, here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF, AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. Do you ever wonder how your money and the things you own are actually helping you to live out what you really feel called to in your heart? There's so much peace of mind when you can sense that your money is aligned with your values and your convictions, as well as your financial goals. And there really is a lot of peace of mind when you know deep down that your financial goals are then in sync with your values and convictions.
That's right, James. But that's easier said than done. There's so much financial information coming at us every minute of every day. It can actually be overwhelming. Terminology, ideas and philosophies, various competing principles, and of course, financial products and services. Keeping all of this information straight can be downright confusing, possibly even scary.
That's right. Yeah, Eric. And you know, when you are confused or scared, you just plain old are not making good decisions.
Whoops.
Yeah. And that can keep you from being all that God wants you to be. And it can hurt you pretty badly as well.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, welcome to episode 36 of Money and Mission. I'm James Good.
And I am Eric Terrio. Each week, in the first part of our show, we'll talk about some of the current financial events so you have a better understanding of what some of the terminology and events actually mean.
Yeah, and then partway through the show, we get to our weekly puzzler, which is our favorite piece, our favorite section of the whole entire, well, it's my favorite section anyway.
Yeah.
And
we're starting to refine those.
That's right. We're getting a little bit better at these puzzlers. But anyway, we have no idea if these are interesting to anyone but us. But we're the ones here at the mic. We're running the podcast. So we get to.
They're sticking around.
They're sticking around. And they haven't thrown us off the air yet.
Nope.
That's right.
So let's jump into our week in review. I'm sure I have a guess, but what did you think was a financial news highlight throughout this past week?
Yeah, well, as we're recording this, we have a new president.
Dun, dun, dun. For better or worse for the listeners, I'm sure, but there is a new man in office.
That's right.
Not
brand new. No, I mean, as of this recording, Trump has been in office now for 3 full days.
Yes.
And he is.
Well, I meant new as in he had a prior term.
Oh, he had a prior term. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, that's right. But he is the second president in U.S. history to be elected to a second non-consecutive term.
That's right. Grover Cleveland.
Grover Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
I really should have checked to see, was Grover Cleveland a good president or not?
I heard his second term didn't go that well.
Grover Cleveland's second term didn't go that well.
I didn't do any research, but I remember some people try to stand them apart and say, well, Grover Cleveland's second didn't go well. We'll see how Trump goes. So.
We'll see how this one works. Yep. That's right. Well, we have to remember to pray for our leaders for sure. And for
the outgoing leaders.
And for the outgoing leaders. That's right. Everyone all the way across the board. But there certainly have been a lot of moves in the first few days.
For sure.
A flurry of moves. And I think, you know, if you watch the news headlines, you see, or the, you know, news videos and news shows, you see President Trump sitting at the table signing all these executive orders.
There were stacks of those binders.
Stacks and stacks.
There was portfolios.
That's right. And it's kind of important to remember that executive orders are the way that a president runs the executive branch.
That's right.
That's
a very powerful tool.
That's right. Sometimes if you just watch the news, you would think, oh my goodness, like this is terrible, where, you know, the president comes in and signs all these executive orders. But that's how the president runs the executive branch, through executive orders.
And all of them do it. Hundreds per each president. You know?
They do, actually. You know, I think
they average like one every few days. Or
average? I don't know what the average is, but actually—
At least one a week, I'd say.
That's right. I looked this up, and I found it on the internet, so it must be true.
Of course, especially right. If it was on X or Facebook.
That's right, yeah. But no, seriously, there is a website called the Federal Register.
Mm-hmm.
So it's federalregister.gov. And if you go out to the federalregister.gov, you can find a list of like presidents going all the way back to Franklin Roosevelt. And this Federal Register lists how many executive orders each president signed during their term. And
you can read them too.
Yeah, there are clickable links. You can actually click into any one of these to read what the executive order actually was all about. If you're so inclined, right? It's not quite like—
It's not homework.
That's right. It's not like the stories we read to, you know, our granddaughter at bedtime, right?
Which executive order do you want to be read tonight?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. You know.
Oh my goodness. Did look, though. It has not been updated for the past few days for Trump's second term, so none of his are listed.
None of the most recent ones that he signed.
So we had to do some digging on different news sites.
That's right.
Actually, I got the best resource off whitehouse.gov.
Oh, okay.
And they posted bulletins for just about all the big executive orders that were signed.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So whitehouse.gov is a good source of information. The federalregister.gov is a good source of information. But while some of the news outlets are exclaiming about all the executive orders, I thought it was interesting just to look back through. Apparently, President Biden signed 160 executive orders while he was in office.
I wonder how much that updated. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. That's a good, it does say there is a link for 2025. It shows 11 executive orders in the first few days. But as you go back through, Bill Clinton, for example, President Clinton signed 364 executive orders between 1993 and 2001.
That's almost 50 a year. He was in years for 8 years.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Ronald Reagan signed 381 executive orders between 1981 and 1989.
Same.
And let's see, who was the next big one back here? Jimmy Carter? No, Jimmy Carter was not that many. Franklin D. Roosevelt signed 2,023 executive orders between 1937 and 1945.
Wow.
I mean, he was president during the war, and so there was a lot going on during that time. So anyway, the point is, throughout our history, presidents have signed a lot of executive orders. That's how the president runs.
So it's not unprecedented.
It is not unprecedented. That's right. It's not unprecedented.
That's right.
Okay. Moving right along. But President Trump has promised that many things would change very quickly. And so the markets have been, markets have ticked up, really, in anticipation of things getting better. But it's important to remember, in my view anyway, it's important to remember that you can come in and make a lot of promises, but principles don't just change.
No.
Because you have a new person making different promises. So principles tend to remain the same, even though the details around us change. That's why it's so important to be building our own planning and our own expectations and so on and so forth and good principles. But an example really is that inflation, of course, the way to curb inflation is to spend less than we're making.
Absolutely.
Right. I mean, anytime you overspend, you are you are spending more than you actually have the capacity to spend. And so you have more purchasing power chasing either the same amount of goods and services or fewer. And that drives prices because there's more demand.
And I just thought about it. It's inflation in people's lives, essentially, because of the term you live within your means. So when people get a raise, they start spending more. You get a raise, you start spending more. So you're introducing inflation into your own life.
Into your own life. That's right. You're being a part of the problem like that.
You're still eating the same amount of meals, sleeping the same amount of nights in a bed and driving one car, but all of that will just creep up on you when you want to spend more.
It just creeps up. That's exactly right. So the important principle there is that inflation doesn't just like make a left turn and go away because you start making new promises. If you don't live in adherence to the principle, then you will have the same problem even if there's a different president.
Absolutely.
The way to increase the actual amount of products available for sale is to manufacture more.
There's a stunner.
That's just a reality of life, right? So
you know, thunk it.
That's right. So if President Trump is successful in actually having more manufacturing here in our country, then maybe there will be less inflation, but time will tell on that. Debt, of course, is another principle or principles of debt. The only way to curb debt is to spend less than you make. Feels like we just said that.
I should have looked ahead.
No, that's okay. I mean, it's...
In parentheses, live within your means.
Live within your means. It's such a basic principle, but it's true at every single level, right? If you don't live within your means, then you'll wind up having debt.
And there's only two things you can do, right?
Two things, which are?
Cut the amount of expenses you pay out and find a way to bring in more money.
Ouch. But what if I don't want to cut anything out?
Then you need to earn more money.
There's just no way around this, right?
It's not magic.
That's right. I mean, all the best planning in the world, everything. If you are unable to follow that equation of spending less than you make, living within your means, then you end up with debt. Whether you are a person, a family, a business, government agency, a charity, it really doesn't matter. The same principle applies. And again, you can have changes in administration, but if you don't follow the principle, then you wind up with a problem.
Yes, that's right. Well, we're out of time in this segment. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, let's jump into some of those executive orders that have been signed in the past 3 days and talk about how they affect us and our overall economy. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio.
Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James.
And this is Eric. And
there you are.
Flexing muscles while I say that.
That's right. You have to do that. It's so cold.
Yeah.
As we're recording this.
Got to get that blood flowing.
That's right. By the time this airs, it'll probably be like 80 degrees outside again or 60 or whatever. Some much warmer climate.
I wouldn't mind a flash heat day like that.
That's right. So when I was a kid, we used to skate on ponds and creeks. And
same.
That's right. And
I don't see people swimming on ponds anymore.
Skating on ponds.
What did I say? Swimming.
Swimming.
Oh, yeah. Skating.
That's right. I mean, I saw this thing of a bunch of people hopping into lake, whatever the lake is out of Chicago. And I just thought, what are you guys, nuts?
Whew.
Wow.
Like a polar plunge.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that has nothing to do with anything.
Nope.
Money and mission. But let's get back on track. And so we've been talking a little bit here about executive orders and some of the things that have happened since President Trump took office over the last couple of days. And we talked about all the executive orders that presidents have signed throughout history, thousands of them.
Mm-hmm.
And just so that you know that this is the way a president runs a government. So it's not out of the ordinary and it's the way things work.
That's right.
But principles, we said, don't change. And the reason this is important is that it's easy to get caught up in the headlines and so on and so forth and forget about principles.
So like a good principle would be not carrying debt.
Not carrying debt. That's right.
And our government definitely carries a lot of debt.
A lot. An enormous amount of debt. And that has not changed over the last week.
No, it has not.
No. The debt pile is still out there. And someone, this is not a Republican or Democrat or any other political party. This is a fact of life.
It affects us all equally.
It does. The debt is out there. And, you know, and a significant portion of our government's debt obligations, though, come in the form of something that's called an unfunded liability. And an unfunded liability is simply a promise to pay where you don't have the apparent capacity to pay. It's that simple. Like if I have $100,000 sitting in a bank account and I promised you to pay you $1,000 a month for the next 3 years, you would look at that and say, oh, you owe me $36,000 and you have $100,000 in the bank, you're good for it.
That's a funded liability.
That is a funded liability. Mm-hmm. But if I promise to pay you $1,000 a month for the next 3 years and I'm borrowing more money every single year and every single month and just keep borrowing and keep running it up, you would look at me and say, James, you know, that is an unfunded liability. You made me this promise, but you have no capacity to pay. So we have Social Security out there, and Medicare, and things like FDIC insurance.
Wasn't that a little confusing? Because shouldn't they be considered funded?
What, Social Security and Medicare?
Yeah, you pay into Social Security your whole life.
Ah, yes.
You pay into Medicare.
Well, you do. That's true.
So it's being funded.
But there is a lot more going out than there is coming in. That's right.
We'll fund it a little bit for you.
We'll fund it a little bit. That's right. So unfortunately, it really falls under that heading of an unfunded liability. And our government has a lot of unfunded liabilities. Even if you make government more efficient by, let's say, hiring fewer people or putting a hiring freeze and so on and so forth.
Oh, boy. We have some of those points coming up.
That's right. We do. Mm-hmm. It's almost like I read my notes.
Oh. Good job.
That's right. But anyway, so, I mean, you can really cut down. You can try to be more efficient and everything. But if a large line items that are just baked into your expected expenditures – are these promises to pay, the only way that you can really, really cut down on just burgeoning debt is to address some of those issues. Mm. And that's a very, very difficult topic to address because nobody wants to get less. Let's talk about executive orders.
Yes.
I feel like I just ran out of outline.
No, that's great. Let's jump in and talk about some of the executive orders that President Trump has signed in the past few days, which have the potential to make a great impact.
That's right. Well, right at the top of the list here, at least in the notes that you had put together, Eric, is this Department of Government Efficiency.
Yes, there was lots of executive orders, but I tried to just pull out the ones that were financial and economic in nature. And this was a controversial one. I remember leading up to the actual election, he announced that he was going to enact a DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency, and he has signed an executive order to do so.
To do so.
Mm-hmm.
So it remains to be seen whether, again, all that efficiency is actually going to make the government more efficient.
Right.
But even if it does, it still doesn't take away the fact that there are unfunded liabilities.
No. But it'll help find the funding for it.
It'll help find the funding.
And I think DOGE has a goal of, what was it, like $2 trillion cuts by X amount of time. Some people are saying that's crazy.
Some big numbers.
Some big right. numbers.
So it'll
but
be.
Could you imagine if $2 trillion of debt came off our books?
That would be significant.
Yeah.
That would be significant. So we'll see how this plays out. Stay tuned, right? Mm-hmm. But keep an eye on those numbers because, again, the principle doesn't change. But it's at least somebody has an idea and they're trying to work at it. What's this return to in-person work?
Yes, this is an executive order that was signed that all executive branch offices and employees must return to work and aren't allowed to work remotely. And I felt that this might be appropriate because we've talked in the past of different real estate investments and how some of them have been taking a hit because the work from home and returning to work and, you know, all that controversy. So They're saying all executive employees need to come back in the office.
Right. So this whole, you know, how does work from home again? Just let's kind of put that together really briefly. If everybody's working from home, then there's not a need for that real estate space.
Right.
All the office buildings and so on and so forth.
Those cafes and shops that are around them are affected.
That's right.
Without
that foot traffic and all those. Now, just because you're returning to work doesn't mean you have to stop down at the cafe and buy a cup of coffee. But most people do.
No, but consumer behavior.
That's right.
Suggest they would.
Most people do. So when you're staying at home, when all these people stay home and work from home, then it impacts the economic. It impacts the transactions, and of course, an economy is made up of all these transactions, and so things are affected, or the economy is affected, and the economy is implicated, I guess, right? Or there are implications in the economy.
Absolutely.
I didn't practice that before I said it.
No.
So we'll see how this, you know, return to in-person work, how that changes the way that different economies, local economies across the country are affected. That'll be very interesting to watch as well.
And then the next, we have an executive order signed, a regulatory freeze pending review. And this instructs that only the department and agency heads are allowed to approve new regulations. And I felt this was appropriate because a lot of the industries that we talk about, they are very vocal about how burdened they are by some of these regulations. So this could have an impact.
Yeah. So is this a regulation? I mean, is an executive order?
This is an executive order freezing new regulations being enacted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So philosophically, one wonders whether this is
a
regulation. Yeah. Okay.
No.
All right. Well, okay.
This is an order from a president.
That's right. There's too much to cover. We don't have to get stuck on that little rabbit trail.
Right.
That's right.
And I would say another big one that was signed was Unleashing American Energy.
Mm-hmm.
That was the headline on whitehouse.gov. There's two parts here. One, to encourage energy exploration and production on federal lands and waters, including the outer continental shelf, in order to meet the needs of our citizens and solidify the U.S. as a global energy leader. So that's for energy. And then part B says to establish our position, leading producer and processor of non-fuel minerals, including rare earth minerals, which will create jobs and prosperity at home. Yada, yada.
Yeah. So, you know, the interesting...
So energy and rare earth minerals.
The interesting economic reality there is that if you are in the business of exploring where you could find more oil, let's say, and oil prices are down, you as an exploration company really don't have much of a financial incentive to go find more oil, right? Because oil prices are down.
That's right.
The higher that oil prices go, the more of an incentive you have to actually go look for more oil.
Absolutely.
Which seems somewhat counterintuitive, right? Because the whole point of getting more exploration is to produce more supply so that the price comes down. But
and everybody wins.
That's right. But to incentivize oil exploration, there needs to be a higher price so that those companies have an opportunity to get a better profit. So, you know, it's very possible. It'll be interesting to see if we actually see an increase in energy prices before we see those prices coming back down.
Yes.
Right.
No, that's true.
Maybe I should not spend so much time thinking.
No. I think that's what they were doing when they were writing this order.
Just thinking that through. That's right. But if over some longer period of time, energy prices do come down, that, you know, the significant cost of transporting things from point A to point B could have that kind of very positive impact on pricing and the inflationary effect that we've been feeling for a number of years.
Yeah.
I think at least that's probably the goal.
Yeah. And I think another big one here is called the America First Trade Policy.
Mm.
And I think the rationale behind it is that his prior administration treated trade policy as a critical component to national security and reduced the nation's dependence on other countries. And so this is spelling out, it says here that the Secretary of Commerce, in consultation with the Secretary of Treasury and the United States Trade Representative, shall investigate the causes of our country's large and persistent annual trade deficit. So they're really trying to tackle that trade deficit. And yeah, I think that would be a good thing. We talk about all the time how our trade deficit is so high.
That's right.
With other nations and how that's not good for us.
That's right. We're just not manufacturing things here like we used to.
No, very service driven.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, we've talked before about how when a government agency, namely like presidents and governors and, you know, people who are in charge, when they make decisions that it has impacts in or it impacts the future, and it creates a direction, a broad direction. And certainly there's been a lot of that here over the last few days, and I think more to come. So stay tuned as we continue to track through how that impacts the economy around us.
Yes, yes. Well, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio.
Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF, AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
And we need to do our weekly puzzler.
Don't.
We forget about that every week. New Year's resolution. Stop forgetting the weekly puzzler.
Even though it's James' favorite part.
That's right.
He always forgets.
Yeah.
So I think you're lying to us.
Yeah. Last week, our puzzler was the question, Greenland is how many times bigger than Pennsylvania?
I think I guessed 4 or something like that.
More. Yeah. Higher. What's the next guess?
10.
More.
15?
More.
20?
No, less.
Okay. Getting warmer.
Getting warmer. That's right. Greenland.
Greenland's getting warmer.
Greenland's getting warmer. That's not even funny. Okay. So Greenland is 19 times bigger than Pennsylvania.
Whew.
Wow. Big, big landmass. And there's only like 47,000 people. That live.
58,000.
58,000?
Yeah.
More. Less?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
All right. Yeah. Okay. There's not very many people living in Greenland, and the landmass is 19 times bigger than Pennsylvania.
Yeah. And it's kind of hard to get a perception of it, too, because on some of those maps, it's like pinched up to the top.
That's right.
On the map, and they say it's not really proportionate.
That's
you never
right.
really know up there.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this week's puzzle is equally amazing.
Yes. This one is, I'm not a blanket, yet I cover the ground, a crystal from heaven that doesn't make a sound. What am I? I'm not a blanket, yet I cover the ground, a crystal from heaven that doesn't make a sound. What am I?
If you think you know the answer, send your responses to radiopuzzle@wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com. We'll read the correct answer on next week's show.
Yes, we got it in.
We got it. That's right. Well, we had a question from one of our listeners over in the Carlisle area.
Oh, okay.
And this question really came in saying, I'm coming up on retirement age, but I haven't saved enough money to retire. What should I do?
That's a tough question.
Yes. Well, I would say probably the first expectation to set expectations is you probably won't be working with a financial advisor.
Yes.
Why not?
No.
Well,
no accounts to manage. And
financial advisors typically work with people where there's money
mm-hmm.
to work with. And if there aren't really very many resources, then you know, you're not capable of paying the fees and so on and so forth. But there are still questions to answer about this. And so we wanted to field this question here on the podcast. As advisors, part of our work every day in and day out, is to answer questions that clients have about various topics. But no matter what the question, no matter what the topic, we really always look for enduring principles on which to build our responses and our advice.
Enduring.
Mm-hmm.
They don't change.
That's right. And that's the reason, right? Principles are enduring. Yeah, as you said, they really don't change. The details can change around us, but the principles remain constant.
That's right.
And when we build our life and our planning on principles, then we have something stable, even if it feels like the details around us are not as stable as we would like them to be. We don't always like the outcome.
No, we don't.
Right.
But we all have to adhere to those principles.
That's right. Like the law of gravity is a principle. If you jump out of the airplane, you may not like the result eventually, but still, the principle is constant.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. You may not die, but you definitely won't like the result.
Yeah.
There's been a couple that have survived that. Isn't that crazy?
That is, yeah.
Yeah.
So the question is, I'm coming up on retirement age, but I haven't saved enough money to retire. What should I do?
What should they do?
Yeah. Well, the reason this question is so difficult is because it has to do with unmet hopes and unmet expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone typically starts...
Probably a couple goals in there that they had to let go of as well.
That's right. And everyone starts life usually with a certain either express... a goal or, a dream for the future, an expectation for the future. And we've talked before about making sure that those goals are specific and measurable and so on and so forth. But that doesn't always happen. And even when people do have specific goals that are measurable and realistic and so on, still things don't always play out the way that you anticipate that they would.
And sometimes it can be out of our control.
That's exactly right. Like
a disability or a fortunate thing.
Life events that are financially costly.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's your own fault or not, sometimes these things happen and then you end up being at a place in life where you have to, first of all, I think, adjust expectations.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been a series of decisions year over year that just kind of snowballed for you.
That's right. That's right. So... But before anything, really, we already said adjust expectations, but even before that, I think it is always important to pray about what God would have you to do, whether you feel like you're meeting your goals or not.
Absolutely.
Right. It seems like it's really easy as human beings. We get ourselves in a jam and all of a sudden we're like, God, help me.
Yeah. You should be praying either way.
That's right.
You should be praying giving thanks or you should be praying for answers.
That's exactly right.
If you've met or not met those goals.
Yeah. And this may not sound like a financial plan. You know, pray about what God would have you do. And that is usually not the kind of language that is built into a financial plan.
But that's one we'll talk about.
That's right. But yes, but we cannot stress strongly enough the importance of prayer in your life planning and your financial planning to be where God wants you to be. So if we've prayed now about what God wants us to be doing, we may have to, and if we're up at retirement age and the financial capacity isn't there to do what we always had thought we wanted to do, then we really have to adjust our expectations. And come to grips with the fact that life is not going to look the way that we had thought that it would at one point.
I think the easier you can come to terms with that, the easier you can put a plan in place and
that's right.
And move forward.
That's right. But just coming to terms with that, sometimes there's a grieving process like that that goes through because, you have to let go of some ideas and some things that you thought that you wanted and make an adjustment about other possibilities in life.
Like you said, pray and think and find solace and what would make you happy and full in a simpler life.
That's right. And the good news really is that there are many things where you can find happiness and peace and enjoyment without needing to be overly consumptive.
Sure.
Right. So, but next then, really it's important, I think, to still apply sound planning principles, even if it seems like you don't have anything to plan with. Understand your income sources. So maybe there's a pension. If there isn't a pension, maybe there is Social Security income. You can check and keep track of your Social Security benefits by visiting the Social Security Administration's website.
Yeah, that's a good resource.
www.ssa.gov, SSA, Social Security Administration. So know how much income you do have available so that you can make a plan for living with the resources that you do have. There are other ways then to potentially cut on the cost of living. Oh, what are you pointing to there?
No, up top there, we're talking about, you know, what it might look in retirement. There's expectations. Maybe that doesn't mean working full-time, but you still are working in some capacity.
Right.
You get limited part-time, a lower energy role. I know, you know, the old, everyone sees the greeters at Walmart.
Right.
You know, things like that. There's very low energy roles that you could fill to still earn some of an income.
That's right. Or if you were a professional throughout your working life, maybe there are consulting, part-time consulting opportunities. So looking for those kinds of opportunities to generate some income that can help to supplement what you might be receiving from Social Security.
And you can find purpose out of that as well.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Well, one of the big costs of living has to do with housing.
Oh, for sure.
And
so young and old.
Young and old.
That hurts
right.
us all.
That's right. Most counties, at least in Pennsylvania, and I believe in other states as well, have some form of low-income housing available. And those kinds of resources are helpful to review and understand to look for ways to reduce the cost of housing. I have never lived in a just tiny home, but
do you think you could?
I don't know.
Yeah,
that would be interesting.
Try it on for size.
I don't know if it would be interesting or not, but you do sometimes. I mean, I see ads for tiny homes.
And, oh, it was a thing.
Yeah,
especially through COVID, it boomed.
That's right. So living in a tiny home would be one way to have some nice surroundings, but cut down the cost of living. I know some people actually who took a camper, one of these very nice travel trailer kinds of things, and they actually called up some state parks and they applied for and actually were accepted to be campground hosts.
Oh, wow.
So what happens now is they get to take their camper to all these state parks and they stay there for free. They get free electricity, free everything. In exchange for what they do as a campground host is they answer questions from all the campers that come through.
Make sure rules are being followed.
Make sure rules are being followed.
On the deer loop.
that's right. But they've met some incredible people who are camping the state parks, and they've met people from all over the world. So there's, you know, they're doing something there that has a much lower cost of living. They're having a lot of enjoyment doing it. And they're actually networking and running into opportunities that they might not have encountered otherwise.
That's a great one. And I'd say another big one that we should mention before out of time here is moving in with friends and family. That's a big one that could potentially save a lot of cost and help out with some of the chores and things you need.
That's right. So, yeah, so this is not, you know, probably an exhaustive conversation, but we hope it helps to get the wheels turning if you are getting close to retirement and you find that you just haven't saved enough money, that there are other ways to do the retirement thing, but adjust your expectations, spend time in prayer, and seek God's leading in that for sure.
We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio.
Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
And we are back here today with Cody Hobelman. Hi, Cody, so everyone can hear you and know that there's actually somebody else in this conversation and not just us, right?
Hey guys, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's
thanks for joining us.
I think it was August of 24 that we talked with you, and that was episode 11. For our listeners and anyone that wants to look up episode 11, you can look up Money in Mission on Spotify, or you can dig around in the archives on the Holy Family Radio website. But
that's an early episode, huh? Number 11.
That's right. That's right.
Moving along.
That's right.
One a week, they add up quick.
But Cody, when we talked with you in August, really we were talking about Finish Lines, which is and it's an organization, right? It's a podcast that you authored or sponsored or got started.
I would say the concept is not our original thought. People have been applying this concept for a very, very long time, but we wanted to encourage people to set financial finish lines, which is really just answering the question, how much is enough? And that might be how much is enough income for this year, or it might be how much is enough to save up over the course of my lifetime. That's what we call a financial finish line. And the Finish Line Pledge equips and encourages people to do just that.
Right. And certainly we want to talk a little bit here today about how the year turned out for the Finish Line podcast, but and what you guys have coming up for 2025. But before we do, really, again, this idea of finish lines is, as we were talking, it's not particularly, I mean, Christian people do this, non-Christian people, there's a financial planning concept to spending less than you make. And when you do that, you do have to decide how much is enough, right?
Right.
But then it becomes a question of what you do with that and where you go with that. And that makes all the difference in the world in terms of what's in your heart, driving the question of what you will do with everything that's over and above enough.
Yes, absolutely.
So, but you, again, you have been kind of convicted of that. And on the Finish Line podcast that you do, now you're what, at 2 years or 3 years? How long have you been doing that now?
We're about 4.5 years.
4.5 years.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's great.
So that time flies along. At some point, we'll look at each other and say, oh my goodness, this Money in Mission podcast has been going on for 4.5 years as well. But tell us, how did 2024 turn out for the Finish Line podcast?
Yeah, so the podcast is probably the most popular thing that we do. Also got a chance to do a number of speaking engagements in California and Arizona and DC and just around in live interactions. We did quite a few coaching calls one-on-one, which is usually over Zoom, but podcast is definitely the most viewed, most popular resource that we've put out. We also have calculators and resources and games even on our website, finishlinepledge.com. But for the podcast, we last year, or maybe it was late 2023, brought on an editor, which gave us so much time back. She's amazing. I recommend that anyone doing a lot of content hire an editor. But we actually partnered with an organization called Women Doing Well. And so we've had a guest co-host on a number of episodes, and that has given us a totally new perspective and a new group of people that we're getting to know better. That is an amazing organization focused on empowering women towards generosity. And we actually went from bi-weekly to weekly episodes in the fourth quarter of 2024. So the pace has picked up quite a bit. And that's been very fun and exciting because we get to do twice as many conversations.
Yeah, and those weekly conversations, wow, just as you said, the pace picks up and there it goes from there. Did you say games?
We have a couple interactive games. There's a game of life. We're always quietly putting new stuff on the website. That's probably my favorite. They're based on parables, so there's a clear biblical tie, but it's designed to teach you something about yourself, teach you something about what God says about how we ought to think about money. And I'd encourage people to check it out right on the website there.
Yeah, I'm just curious. I will check it out, but I haven't played the game. Does the game
arrive at like an ending point in sort of sympathy with the idea of a finish line, or is it more like Minecraft that just sort of goes on and on and on and keeps building out forever and ever?
Just like life, this game does end. There are some lessons in that, but yes, there's a clear tie-in to how a finish line would inform the way you actually live your life. And this is just a demonstration, a simulation, if you will, a very simplified simulation of how we live our lives. And we've done that with live audiences. People have filled that out, and it's been really cool, the conversations that have come from that.
You know what I just popped in my mind in terms of those games, what would be interesting is if, like you said, it's a simulation, right? What if you could simulate some of the challenges folks have in reaching their finish line, and they can kind of work those out in the games? That way they could more effectively put it into action in their lives.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of sense in giving people opportunity to put themselves in the story. Mm-hmm. When we read scripture, it can sometimes feel a little distant and hard to relate in a modern context, at least for me. So in order to take a look at my own life and say, where do these concepts hold true for me right now in my circumstances, I find that is where God can use his word and parables and stories to just pierce right through to the core.
You know, playing a game is a nice way of just getting that across while people are having fun, hopefully having fun, not like some video games where you just get really discouraged because you just can never win.
That's right.
I played a couple of those.
Yeah, that's right. I've done that in my life. So you said speaking engagements, right? You've been doing speaking engagements as well. Do you have more speaking engagements scheduled in 2025? What does the calendar look like there for you?
I do have a couple on the calendar. I try to leave some open slots for whatever might come across, but I am planning to go to Indiana over the summer for an event, speaking to advisors, speaking to high net worth individuals, and looking forward to that, but we'll see what else 2025 has in store.
Yeah. Do you get to central Pennsylvania at all?
I would like to.
By invitation, right?
You should come back and visit us. Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Come back and visit us. And well, we will do that. We will have you on the podcast for an entire session sometime.
Now, is your goal working with those advisors and high net worth individuals to kind of use them as a conduit for their audience to spread this concept as well? Or are you kind of just working with them one-on-one? How does that work?
Yeah, it's a great question. So at least with advisors, Ron Blue has a saying that you can't take someone somewhere you haven't been before. So advisors who work with sometimes hundreds of families, the way that they live will impact the way that they advise others to manage their finances. So we see this opportunity in not just introducing these concepts, but encouraging advisors to be continually growing in the area of giving and generosity, because it will teach them so much about God's nature and equip them to lead their clients along that same journey where appropriate. So that has been a focus area for the last couple of years.
That's great.
And I think you've also been a part of, it's called the Journey of Generosity.
Yes. My wife and I started hosting these events over the summer of 2024. So we just hosted our fourth one in Atlanta, and a couple of weeks here, we're going and doing one in Charlotte, North Carolina. These are really impactful generosity retreats that are created by an organization called Generous Giving, based in Orlando, Florida. And that organization's been around for 25 years. I highly encourage people to check it out on the Generous Giving website and host one, invite Generous Giving out to facilitate one. Very, very well done, impactful experiences.
Yeah. So you guys, the website for Generous Giving is generousgiving.org. Basically, yep. Just right.
Right.
So you're anticipating throughout 2025, this Finish Lines podcast will continue to be a weekly thing throughout 2025.
I believe so. We have had so many wonderful people that we've gotten in touch with that we've been able to keep lining up interviews. So as long as God continues to
I'm sure
provide,
they
we'll
know other
pray
great
for
people to connect you with as well, right?
it. That's right.
That's right. It does tend to work that way, doesn't it?
Spider webs out.
That's exactly right. So, well, it's I'm so glad, Cody, that we had a couple minutes here to get caught up. We just again we want everyone to know that throughout the year here, the calendar year 2025, we would like to have you back for a full hour just to talk about Finish Lines and keep bringing that concept to the forefront here. It's so important. I think we say this pretty frequently, but the issue is not so much that God needs our money, right? But
It's
we need,
God's money.
it's God's money, but
That's right.
we pretty badly need to let go of it. That's
Yeah. Yes.
often true. That's often true. And
Yeah, the funny relationship that people have with the money, even knowing what they're doing is not in their best interest in most cases, but they still continue.
that's right. So, well, we appreciate what you do, and we look forward to keeping in touch with you throughout 2025 and going forward. And do feel free to reach out. But again, for our listeners, it's the Finish Line Podcast, and Cody Hobelman is a co-host there. So check out the podcast, and we'll look forward to talking with Cody later in the year.
Thank you for joining us, Cody. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, James. Thanks, Aaron.
All right,
All
you're
right,
listening.
everybody, we're out of time for this episode. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720.